everybody, and welcome into episode 6 of Upon Further Review, the Dallas Morning News Sports Day DFW Sports Podcast. It's a very compact name for everybody, but it is now available in the iTunes store. Kevin and Barry, what do you think about that?
What is iTunes? That's what I'd like to know.
I was downloading some P. Diddy, you know, because I'm...
Not a good day to be talking P. Diddy.
No, it's not. He's not having a good time, is he?
No. No, I don't know why he got in that fight with the football coach, but I just saw the headline.
I think to his credit, he tried to hit him with some kind of equipment in there, so he wasn't actually trying to get in a fight. He was trying to, you know, bash the guy's head in or something.
Okay. Anyway, I'm Evan Grant, Kevin Sherrington, our West Coast rap expert.
Yeah.
And Barry Horn,
I'm an East Coast guy. I went with the East Coast guys.
All right, so let's go to the West Coast. Let's go to the U.S. Open.
We're going to start talking golf. We're starting a podcast talking about golf.
We're starting a podcast talking golf because wasn't the finish worthy of talking right off the top?
Jordan Spieth won, so yeah, absolutely.
The whole finish,
the whole thing.
But what makes it important to us here in Dallas, Texas, is the winner was our new franchise.
Our fourth franchise.
Fifth franchise.
Fifth.
I don't count the Stars.
What about...
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
What about FC Dallas?
Just
wait a minute.
It looks like the Mark sixth franchise.
Yeah, let's call him six.
I will say this. He does not rank sixth.
Sixth professional franchise. I don't want to offend anybody in the
college ranks.
Right.
Sixth professional franchise. Why is he the sixth professional franchise? Why is he that big a story now? Is obviously, winning the first two majors, huge, huge deal.
Now you're answering your own question. Thank you.
Huge, huge deal.
He's halfway to the Grand Slam.
And nobody's done this since, what, Tiger Woods in 2002, right?
Correct.
And no one has, this young has won back-to-back majors since Bobby Jones, which is about 1,000 years ago.
You know, the Ranger coach?
I don't think Bobby Jones was a Texas golfer. I think he was from my home state.
Yeah, he was from your home state. That's back where they invented golf. The thing about this is I don't want to put too much on this kid, you know, because lots of things can go wrong, lots of things can happen, and there's no reason to say, okay, now this kid has to have this kind of career. But for all the great golfers who have come from Texas, and I will contend that per capita there are more great golfers from Texas than in any other sport. This state has produced some unbelievable golfers, that this kid has an opportunity to be right up there with all of them.
Well, it is. Kevin is correct on that. But it's not only that. It's the kind of kid he is. And we're talking about a 21-year-old who should be a senior, I think, at the University of Texas now.
We would hope so.
What are you saying?
Well, I mean, if he didn't have struggles of some kind. It's hard to be a golfer and a student at the same time.
We're not talking about being a football player who are texting the answers to each other in the classroom.
Yeah, apparently.
But
in their children's literature class.
Let's not disparage Jordan Spieth or the University of Texas. We'll save that for our episode on Steve Patterson later on.
Wow.
But this kid is remarkable in who he is, how he goes about doing his business. You saw it if you stayed with the broadcast after Joe Buck asked him about the course, and Joe Buck wanted a controversial. It's a great course, all the other players are crazy, or it's a lousy course, and I agree with the other players. And Jordan just ignored him, and he talked the positive, talked about the fans and what great fans they are up there in Seattle.
All right, yeah. But that's great. The post celebration.
It's important.
But it's not nearly as important to me as what took place when he went to the 18th.
It's the persona of Jordan Spieth we're talking about. It's more than just what goes on the golf course.
But it's what I wrote about for today's paper. It was the fact that Jordan does not let himself be distracted by all this other stuff. And Jack Nicklaus has said on many occasions he loved it when golfers would come to the course and complain about the course, because he said, for every complaint I got, it was one less guy I had to beat. That guy had already beaten himself. And Jordan Spieth refuses to allow that to happen. As soon last week, as I wrote, as soon as it became clear that all these guys were complaining about the course, and one of the golfers said that exact same thing. He said, all these guys are shooting themselves right out of the Open. This could be one of the easiest Opens ever to win. I thought, oh, my gosh, Jordan Spieth has a great chance to win this now, because that's the kind of kid he is. Tremendous, tremendous focus.
Well, look at what Jordan Spieth did on 17. He double bogeyed the hole. He went from a three-stroke lead, and he comes out after that, and it's tied. They're both at four under with Dustin Johnson, and he comes back on the next hole and birdies the hole.
See, that's what that, to me.
Well,
that's
it's not just the birdie for me. It's you've just double bogeyed, and you've watched the scoreboard, and you've gone from a three-shot lead
to tied. I just said that. Thank you.
To tied. Okay, now you go to the tee box at 18, and how do you regather yourself?
See, that's to me what makes him great is that the kid has stumbled. You know, he has stumbled many times. He stumbled in the Masters. And, you know, you can see it in him. He'll step up to the tee box, and all of a sudden he steps back and starts taking practice swings. He's saying, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for this shot right now. And yet he gathers himself. And to me, it'd be one thing if he was just really hot and he was just really on a streak and really playing well. And then the first time something goes wrong, he goes in the tank. And that is not what has happened with him. He has had some bad holes. He has done some poor things. And yet he has gathered himself and come right back. And to me, that play is long term.
I will just tell you that I'm watching the final, the finish, probably, I guess, the last three holes at O'Hare on the way back from the Rangers road trip. And I've never seen people crowded around airport bars or restaurants around TVs to watch a golf final. But there was real drama there, and
it was terrific. I mean, it was 180 degrees away from the way he won the Masters. He won the Masters. He was four strokes up on Sunday, and he ran away with the tournament. This, he showed grit and determination. He showed everything a pro golfer needs to show, and he won the tournament.
Did Dustin Johnson choke it?
Oh, you know, that's hard to say. He hit two great shots.
The drive on 18
may
be the best drive in the history of golf.
I mean,
right?
He hits, and so you know, obviously it takes the nerves show up on the greens. You know, that's you know, everybody understands that. The first putt, I don't fault him for missing the 12 footer. You know, but when you come back and you miss the 3 footer, and it's not like from the angle that we had, although. TV, Fox really did itself proud on this broadcast. On the angle you have, you really can't tell. But it looked like he just pulled it. He just looked like he pulled the putt to the left. It's like, you pulled a 3-foot putt?
Yeah,
but guys pulled. I think Jordan had just done that on the 17th, right? He pulled a putt, too. I mean, people were pulling putts all day long out there.
But the difference is, in this case, is that now Dustin Johnson.
Did you just say pulling putts?
Dustin Johnson, leave that alone.
Oh my God!
Dustin Johnson has a history, and now this just adds to the history.
Right, he has a legacy. He has that's
who
legacy.
He is. He's the Greg Norman.
What is his legacy? That he's marrying Paulina Gretzky?
No, his legacy is that in these majors he struggles.
He had a bad time at the PGA, and he had a bad time at the U.S. Open previously.
So he's the modern day Greg Norman.
And yet, I guess we didn't. Did we get Greg Norman's reaction? Because I had no sound. Did we get Greg Norman was on the broadcast?
Greg Norman was on the broadcast. He had one of the great chokes of all time. And somebody's got to turn to him and say, Greg, what do you think about this? Greg,
What's going through his mind right now?
The Masters. What's going through his mind? And we got nothing.
Well, Joe Buck did kind of make a cursory reference to that, but he didn't ask him specifically.
No, Norman, if at the whole tournament, it was incumbent upon Buck as the play by play guy or as the lead broadcast, he had to ask questions, and he didn't at that point, and he shouldn't have to ask. Norman should volunteer. It might have been uncomfortable for Buck. You know, this is their first tournament they've worked together, but it was not a good broadcast.
I thought also, you know, as far as the broadcast goes, I got the impression watching it that they're tired of Jordan Spieth.
How could it be? Already? He's 21 years old.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It seemed to me they wanted, of course.
Well, if you get Dustin Johnson, you obviously get Paulina Gretzky, and you get Wayne Gretzky, and you get
Janet Jones. Don't leave her out, please.
Don't leave her out.
Again, let's show our age.
Did you see the Flamingo Kid?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to say.
Barry's all-time favorite.
So, I mean, that's what Fox, and quite frankly, if it's ESPN, probably if it's any network at that point in time, that's what they want. There's more... cultural mixing, mix of pop culture and
more
sports.
People.
Yeah, it's just a bigger story than some 21-year-old kid who, as Barry said, is going to say all the right things.
Well, they were also pushing the Jason Day angle, which it's a great angle. The guy's got vertigo. He's really struggling out there.
Barry wants to know if you saw Vertigo.
I did see Vertigo. It was a great movie, by the way. Not Hitchcock's greatest, but a very good movie.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I'm sorry, I cited some actual classics instead of The Flamingo Kid.
What is the greatest Hitchcock movie? Quick.
Psycho.
Okay, you're wrong.
Okay. I don't know. I only know M. Night Shyamalan, even though I don't know how to pronounce his name. Let's move to the Rangers.
All
talking
right.
about horror shows of okay. the weekend.
Yeah.
So the 5-game road trip to L.A. and Chicago. 2-3 against a quartet that included Kershaw, Greinke, Sale, and Rodon. 4 really impressive pitchers, if you ask me. But
it's what could have been. It's not what it's what could have been. It's what position they were in. They were in position maybe to go 4-1
They were in position to win all 5 games.
Okay.
To be honest. Now, I mean, they did win one game that they shouldn't have won, which was the 9th inning comeback against Sale after he had allowed 2 hits and struck out 14 in 8 innings. But you have the 1-0 walk-off loss on the balk in L.A. in the Greinke game, and then you have the
Sunday.
The Sunday game, both Saturday and Sunday, in which they lost by 1 run at Chicago. For me, I think the biggest thing is this team, it's becoming more and more evident that they did a good job of holding the fort for 2 weeks while Beltre and Hamilton were out and DeShields was out. But they need these guys back. They can't continue with the current lineup. They need these guys to get back.
Bigger problem for me is not that. Look, you're playing 3 great left-handers. Okay, the fact that they won 2 of those games is phenomenal to me that they did that. And so I don't have a big problem with this road trip. My big problem for this team right now is the same thing it has been all year long. The bullpen stinks. They cannot continue to go on with this bullpen. You know, you're not going to hit against great pitchers. It's just not going to happen. It's just like every playoff game you ever watch, you're going to lose against those guys. And they actually beat 2 of them, and that is phenomenal. They didn't actually beat Sale, but they
won the game.
They won the game. So that's all that matters. But this bullpen is, I mean, to me, when you bring in Ross Detweiler, you're throwing in the white flag there. That guy's body language is so bad on the field. I can't imagine. When is a good time to bring him in? I can't imagine it. So I think this is where John Daniels has to move for this team, because it is sucking the life out of it. Every game to go out there with so many guys in that group that you just can't count on.
Well, there's 3 lefties in the bullpen right now, and I don't think there's any of the 3 that you feel really good.
You'd want to count on.
No.
About going.
And you made that point on Twitter in the Alex Claudio. He goes out for the 2nd inning, and he said that the percentages are not with the Rangers here. And that is absolutely right. He is a home run waiting to happen.
Well, I think with Claudio, you know, if you look at the overall numbers, he's actually been good against right-handers. And you look at all those numbers, but I think this is one of those situations where, given the guy's stuff and how below average it is, if you give guys enough time where he's coming back out for a 2nd inning and they've all said, okay, let's take a breath. We've seen this. Let's time ourselves a little bit better. You're asking for trouble.
Absolutely.
You guys are 100% right. But who was the White Sox lefty that they brought in that looked like Cy Young against the Rangers?
They brought in Zach Duke.
It was crazy.
Well, against a very heavy left-handed hitting lineup, you know,
it was boom, boom, boom. It was ridiculous. 2 days they brought him in.
I want to say they brought him in all 3 days.
Okay.
I'm sorry. He did not pitch on Friday because they went straight to David Robertson.
Yeah, but
on Saturday and Sunday he retired the Rangers.
You don't see.
He didn't work up a sweat.
And even as well as Sean Tolleson has pitched this year, at least as effective as he's been, I wouldn't say as well as he's pitched. He doesn't go out and dominate an inning.
No.
There's very rarely in any of his appearances.
Oh,
where
now
he's
here's Evan.
1, 2,
show
3.
Me who does. Evan, come on. I'll say what Evan's going to say.
He gets up a walk. He gets himself in trouble almost every appearance.
But I have heard this argument from fans for 15 years, going back to John Wetland, who always lived on the edge as
he
a
did.
Closer.
Wetland
and
did.
Always pitched himself out. And Joe Nathan. Who's going to go down as maybe one of the 5 best closers of all time, you know, pitched himself into trouble, pitched himself out.
But that's also why they let Joe Nathan go.
Well, they let him go also because he was going to
make a lot of money,
and he was
right.
pushing 40. But the guy's save percentage all time is
I just want to say Kevin would like to be making a lot of money and pushing 40 also again.
my point is that there's almost no move you could make in the bullpen that wouldn't be a good one to bring in somebody else. From the back end of the bullpen on. And I'm not saying that Tomlinson is not a – I would prefer him to be the eighth inning guy, you know. But I think that there's just almost any move they could make that would really improve this team. And I think it's really incumbent upon John Daniels to do that.
Well, I think it's not only incumbent upon John – it's incumbent upon ownership to say, hey,
yes,
go out and spend some money. We're close. We, you know, the ceiling here – is self-imposed.
But you get back to what Kevin's point was in the paper a couple of weeks ago, and that is you're still chasing Houston right now.
Right.
Is now the time that you go out and fix the bullpen, or do you wait until you catch them so that a guy puts you over the top and assures you of a
Well, how about putting a little pressure on Houston, too? This is, we're not talking about a team with a history of being out in front and ignoring distractions. That team is going to want to come back to the Rangers. I'm telling you.
Oh, I absolutely believe that.
So let's put some, if you're the Rangers, you got to also want to put some pressure on them.
Well, and I did a little
make
bit
some
of
moves.
I did a little bit of research on this. Looking forward,
very little bit of research.
If you look at the schedule, the chances of Houston coming back to Earth are significant. The Rangers have going forward. They have 9 games left against teams that currently hold playoff spots outside of the AL West. Okay. Against the Yankees, Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Kansas City, and anybody from the National League. Houston, in that same time period, 29 games against those same opponents.
That's a great stat.
So, that I mean, the Astros have a significantly harder schedule. The Rangers also have 6 more home games left to play.
And that is a team that has not been there. That's a young team. They're going to if you can put pressure on
But you also saw how the Astros reacted to.
Don't point at me.
I will point at you every time I need to, young man, and that's the last time anybody will call you young man.
Yeah.
But you saw how the Astros reacted when the Rangers did put a little bit of pressure by calling up Gallo and calling up Chichi. The Astros went to Correa and then they went to Valbuena. I'm losing the pitchers.
Valbuena.
Yeah.
I think the one point I would make when you said that when I wrote that column, I was speaking specifically about adding a guy like a Cole Hamels. I think adding a bullpen piece is different. It's not as expensive to get, and it's a more viable thing to do. And I think if they could go out and make a piece like that and add a piece like that right now, because I don't see that coming from anywhere. Right? We don't think Luke Thompson's coming up here,
Luke Jackson.
I'm taking Jake Thompson and Luke Jackson, getting them mixed up.
Don't get your biblical.
Yeah,
no
kidding. They are. He's not coming up now, and I don't think
he's ready. To be perfectly honest.
Right. I don't think that he is. And frankly, I think that when you're talking about the back end of the bullpen, that's such a nerve wracking deal. That, you know, Keone Kell has really done a really good job for the most part, but I think he shows his youth on a lot of occasions, and I think it's wise not to put him in that eighth, ninth inning.
Neffy's throwing 97 in the minors right now.
Yeah, I think you know, maybe what they bring him back. You know, maybe he's got the message. Here's the thing: does anybody know what's going on in his head?
No,
I don't think so.
No, never.
All right, quick question before we finish up on this episode, guys. So Jordan Spieth obviously is the huge story going forward this summer, at
Absolutely.
Least for the next 3 weeks. Going into St. Andrews. Is he the best active professional athlete from Dallas right now? And who's his competition?
Well,
is it Kershaw?
Yeah, sure. It's Kershaw. Kershaw is number
one. But it's hard to compare a guy who plays a team sport with a guy who's individual.
Well, and people would say, yeah, how much of an athlete
that's
are you as a golfer?
That's the purpose of why we are having a make-believe argument.
But I'm telling you, it's a hard comparison.
Okay, but
thank you.
Thank you.
Let me throw another guy in there. Before you poo-poo it.
Are you going to Errol Spence?
You're darn right, Abe. He's a welterweight. He's one of the best 100. Wait a minute. He's one of the best 140. He's an up and comer. Don't forget the name, Errol Spence. He could be. What is the glamour weight class in boxing right now?
There is no
glamour weight class.
Oh really?
Class.
Oh really? Did you not see how much money they made it at the Pacquiao fight? Mayweather
loved
fight?
That fight too, didn't they? Really,
you know,
big.
You know who the highest two paid athletes.
Barry, don't
do you know
choked
the?
Up
do you know who the world, the highest two, according to Forbes magazine, most highest two paid athletes in 2015 are? Mayweather 1, Pacquiao 2.
They made a lot of money. Does that make it great?
That makes them high-profile athletes. So why? I don't know why you guys are so willing.
But you'll take Errol Spence over.
No, I didn't say I would take him. I said he doesn't belong in the conversation now. But keep an eye on him. He's up and comer.
All right. Does anybody else belong in the conversation, or is it just Spieth and Clayton Kershaw?
It's just Spieth and Clayton Kershaw.
What about Matthew Stafford, Chris Bosh, LaMarcus Aldridge, Von Miller? What about any of those guys?
No.
No, it's harder for those guys, for most of them. In baseball, a pitcher, you stand out so much. You can dominate a game all by yourself. As great as LaMarcus Aldridge is, he's not able to dominate a game all by himself.
He hasn't won a championship. He hasn't been center stage.
Well, Clayton Kershaw hasn't won a championship either, but he's winning.
He's been an MVP.
He's winning Cy Young's awards. MVP. He's in the conversation among the greatest pitchers ever already in his career. So Clayton Kershaw, until further notice, is number one, but Jordan's working his way up.
What if Jordan wins the British Open?
Oh.
If Jordan wins the British, I'll say this. If he wins the Grand Slam. He wins the Grand Slam this year.
No, which how many people have done? Nobody.
Nobody from Dallas. I mean, nobody from Texas, you mean.
I don't think anybody's won the Grand Slam, the modern Grand Slam, since it's been these no one's won it.
Nobody's
the same
won
year.
All four.
In the same year.
Not in the same year.
Tiger Grand Slam or anything like that. So, yeah, that'd be pretty good. In the year of the Triple Crown winner, by the way.
That would be good.
All right. Well, then I guess we have something.
No words with friends today?
No words with friends. You guys have poo-pooed the words with friends.
Oh, I loved it.
No, I refuse to engage you right now.
Wow, I like
that.
And besides, you guys want to get out of here early. You guys, Barry's got lunch plans, and you want to get out of here early.
I do.
All right, so we'll sign off for this episode, shall we?
Yes.
Goodbye, Kevin. Goodbye, Barry.
Goodbye, Evan.
Goodbye to my friends.